This is Cool Science Radio on KPCW in Park City. Cool Science Radio, science and technology that's accessible and entertaining. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, here with my co-host, John Wells. This morning, we speak first with New York Times columnist Carl Zimmer, who also teaches science writing at Yale University. He joins us for a deep dive into genetics. His new book is She Has Her Mother's Laugh: The Powers, Perversions, and Potential of Heredity.
And good morning, Lynn. Then we speak with Richard Munson, an author, businessman, and activist in the field of clean energy and industrial energy efficiency. He directs the Environmental Defense Fund's clean energy efforts in the Midwest, and he's now written a book about Nikola Tesla. Tesla's inventions transformed our world, and his visions have continued to inspire great minds for generations. You know his name. You may know a few of his inventions. But did you realize the profundity of his influence on today's technological advances? Stay tuned to hear Munson discuss his new book, Tesla, the Inventor of the Modern.
Those two interviews plus today's cool stories when we return. Stay with us. It's Cool Science Radio.
Matt here from San Francisco Design. Since the start of our business in 1990, we have been supporting KPCW. We offer home decor for Park City and Salt Lake and feature modern furnishings from around the world. Whether you're looking to furnish an entire home or just redecorating a single room, we can help with our in-house design team. Located on Bonanza Drive and on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Hi, this is Steve Roney, owner of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. I'm a proud resident of Park City and a loyal supporter of KPCW and all it does for our community. Our agents in Summit and Wasatch counties can be reached at any of our 30 offices or at our website, bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, here with John Wells. Yale University science writing professor and New York Times columnist Carl Zimmer joins us now to discuss his new book, She Has Her Mother's Laugh: The Powers, Perversions, and Potential of Heredity. Zimmer explores the ancient and modern definitions of heredity, from CRISPR technology to eugenics and epigenetics, and the revelations regarding the microbiome. Zimmer takes a truly deep dive into the topic, and we're pleased he could join us here on Cool Science Radio. Good morning to you, Carl Zimmer. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Carl, a couple days ago, I was sitting around with some friends, and we were guessing why one of our young friends was losing his hair. And we were postulating on, you know, male pattern baldness, and is it recessive or dominant? And then we thought, we know nothing about heredity. And it's very curious because then I picked up your book and you said what we know about heredity is quite obsolete. How so?
Well, you know, we all get taught the basics of heredity in grade school or high school. You know, we learn about Gregor Mendel and his pea plants, and that's obviously a really important place to start. But that's hardly the last word on heredity. You know, the way that genes that we inherit from our parents influence us turns out to be incredibly complicated. The simple examples that we learned from Mendel are not actually all that common. So even something like baldness could actually be a very complicated situation with a bunch of genes interacting in a certain environments to lead to baldness. And then in other situations, those same genes might leave you with a full head of hair. So you know, when we say like, oh, it's just heredity, I think we're selling heredity short. It's much cooler than that.
Yeah. And I think maybe it makes us safe or feel safe to make these vast generalizations about heredity, because then we feel like we can predict what our outcome is going to be. You, however, you went out on a limb and you say you're the first journalist to ever have your genome sequenced. And if you can talk about going through that process, what it is to have your genome sequenced, first of all.
Yeah, and I should say that, you know, other journalists have also had their genomes sequenced, but I got so obsessed with this that I actually got my hands on the raw data and went to a number of scientists, and they worked with me to really dive deep into my genome and look at it at kind of a level that is not easy to look at. You know, if you get, you know, a report from, say, 23andMe, they're kind of like giving you a very high-altitude look at your DNA, and they're picking out a few interesting variants to tell you about. But I wanted to look at all 3 billion letters of my DNA, and there are all sorts of fascinating things to learn there. So, for example, I didn't know, but I have a variant that actually protects me from autoimmune diseases. It actually dramatically lowers my risks of it, certain kinds of autoimmune diseases, like Crohn's disease. And, you know, we don't think much about mutations being beneficial, but some of them can be. And in this case, it turns out that scientists who have studied this particular mutation have then been able to develop a drug based on what they've learned that fights autoimmune diseases. And it's just coming onto the market now. And so it's really cool to sort of see that kind of connection between something I've been carrying around all this time that I inherited from my parents and, you know, seeing the advances in medicine. I mean, on the other hand, you know, I also learned that, you know, I inherited a copy of a gene from both of my parents that makes me more prone to gain some weight than if I didn't have it, you know, just a few pounds. But what's neat is that, you know, scientists actually showed me their understanding of how those mutations work, that basically there's a switch in my cells that is stuck, so that instead of switching over to turn calories into heat, they tend to just store it as fat. So, you know, that I have to live with that.
Carl, how did you feel about what you learned about your genetics, about autoimmune, and also the ability to maybe gain some weight? How did that make you feel? Did it change your behavior?
I think that discovering that that mutation that's linked with weight in a gene called FTO certainly, you know, reinforced to me that I really ought to be a little more careful about the things that I eat. You know, I should know that my genes, in this case, really aren't on my side. But, you know, what was particularly interesting is, like, looking at a lot of genes all at once, you start to realize that they actually kind of they can influence one trait in different directions. So you can have certain genes that raise your risk of heart disease and then other genes that lower your risk of heart disease. And you start to realize that there's not one gene you typically need to worry about. It's just that your health is influenced by lots and lots and lots of genes, having lots of little effects put together.
Carl, you're a prolific writer in the science community. Many articles, a number of books. What about this subject really grabbed you? Because it seems like you took a deeper dive into this particular subject.
You know, I guess I've been fascinated with heredity just as long as I can remember, but I don't think that makes me unusual. I mean, we all talk about heredity all the time. You know, we try to figure out what we got from our parents. You know, people who have kids look at their kids and try to see, you know, what they've been inheriting from them. And so, you know, as I became a parent and then started to watch my two daughters grow up, I think it really kind of drove home to me that this is not just an academic exercise. This is really happening. And at the same time, it was fascinating to talk with scientists and to learn about, you know, new insights into heredity that they're just getting now. And it seemed like an opportunity to write a book that to bring together that personal fascination with what scientists can tell us about it.
There are so many ethical questions as we look at, you know, the future of conception, at CRISPR technology and genetic editing. And I would imagine that was a big area of exploration for you as well. What is the most troubling ethical question or perhaps the most profound ethical question about genetic editing to you?
Well, I think that the most profound question is whether we decide it's okay to use it to alter the future of human heredity. Because we we're very quickly gaining that ability. And there have already been experiments that scientists have done to alter genes in human embryos when they're just a little clump of cells. And so we just have to ask, well, when would it be okay to do this? Maybe we'll decide it's okay if somebody is passing down a particular gene for a really devastating disease. You know, maybe it's okay then, because then future generations won't inherit that mutation. It's a very short step from that to saying, well, you know, while we're here, we know that there's a mutation that might actually protect people from, let's say, autoimmune disease. So let's say, you know, you want to have my mutation. I mean, why not? While you're there, put that in. Maybe protect people against Alzheimer's. One scientist that I spoke to, a Nobel Prize winner named Craig Mello, has argued that in 50 years, gene editing embryos will be like vaccination is today. Why wouldn't you do that? That would be wrong not to give children all the benefits that science can offer them. I think it's going to make people very uncomfortable, but we have to have that conversation.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Carl Zimmer. He's a science writer. He teaches science writing at Yale University. His new book, She Has Her Mother's Laugh, The Powers, Perversions, and Potential of Heredity. I want to just take a step backwards here, Carl, if you don't mind. Journalists are so great at explaining in sort of layman's terms technology, and I want you to explore a little bit, if you could, for us, CRISPR genetic editing. What is the process, and how exactly does it take shape?
So CRISPR is a kind of technology that scientists have developed just taking advantage of some natural chemistry that bacteria use, actually, to attack the DNA of viruses. And these bacteria are actually able to zero in on a particular unique stretch of DNA in a virus's genes. So what scientists will do is they will use these molecules and basically create their own probes that can seek out any stretch of DNA that you want, basically, and then they will bring with them these sort of molecular scissors that can cut that target DNA, right. And then they can drop in a different piece of DNA right there. And so it gives you the ability to rewrite DNA effectively. It's pretty accurate. It's very cheap. It's very fast. So it is really totally changing the whole game when it comes to manipulating DNA.
Carl, you touched on a question that pervades all genetic editing conversations. For an example, a country that's ravaged by malaria, why wouldn't you want to make a change if you could? Can you tell us what scientist Anthony James did?
What Anthony James is doing at the University of California is he is putting in pieces of DNA into mosquitoes' genes, which can make them resistant to malaria. In other words, they can't carry the parasite because their immune system attacks it. What's really powerful about this technique is that if one mosquito with these new genes mates with a mosquito that doesn't have these new genes, all their offspring inherit this resistance to malaria. This totally breaks Mendel's rules. This is not what you learned about in high school. But James is taking advantage of CRISPR and its ability to cut and replace DNA. And what this means is that if you were to release maybe a few hundred of these altered mosquitoes into, you know, some region where there's a lot of malaria, within just a couple years, you could potentially convert most of the mosquitoes in the population to being resistant. It could be very fast and potentially permanent. So this might be a real game changer, and there's a lot of investment going into this approach to fighting malaria. On the other hand, there are people who are really concerned that when you release this kind of animal into the wild, it may be really hard to take it back if there's any problems. And, you know, some people have suggested you could use this approach to actually eradicate invasive species by spreading genes that make them sterile. But you want to be real careful that they don't hybridize and that gene hops over into some population of, you know, mice, for example, native mice that you want to preserve because they could be eradicated as well. So it's a really powerful technology, what's called gene drive, that that you can see. I mean, I went to go to a lab and see it be these mosquitoes in real life, but we got to be super careful before we start setting them loose.
The unforeseen and unintended consequences of things like this, the conversations must be involving many, many layers, and it must be, you know, projecting out what is unforeseen. I mean, do we do a good job of that? Are we able to project and to guess what could happen?
It is hard to say because a lot of this biology is just brand new. You know, people are doing this research for the very first time, and so a lot of the variables we just really don't have a good fix on. You know, that being said, I don't think we should just sit back and say, oh, there's nothing we can do because there might be risks we don't know about. I mean, we are living with hundreds of thousands of people dying every year of malaria, and to say, well, that's all right. We don't want to take any risks at all, risks that we can't even imagine. I think that's questionable as well, ethically, I think.
Yeah. Can you explain what epigenetics are?
Sure. So, you know, we inherit genes from our parents, but which of those genes are active in any one of our cells is a totally different matter. And we have lots of molecules in our cells that switch these genes on and off and do so permanently. And when those cells divide, those switches sort of carry on. And so the study of all of that regulation of our genes is called epigenetics. And what's really fascinating about epigenetics in terms of heredity is that it might offer another channel of heredity, so something beyond just the genes that you inherit. Could you actually also inherit epigenetics as well? And this is really fascinating because we know that epigenetics can be influenced by experience. So here you have this possibility that maybe experiences can, in effect, be inherited. And it's really a tantalizing possibility. And in She Has Her Mother's Laugh, I talk about how there is a lot of really solid evidence for it, but the best evidence is in plants. So it looks like plants really do have a very powerful kind of epigenetic heredity that goes through many generations. Now, when you go to animals, then things get a little more questionable. And the closer you get to humans, the evidence gets shakier and shakier. Doesn't mean that it can't be happening, but you know, there's been a lot of hype about epigenetics in humans that, you know, somehow what you do will affect future generations and through some way other than genetics. We don't really have any good evidence of that. We have some tantalizing hints that maybe that's the case, but it's still, the jury is still very much out.
Right. What are some of those tantalizing hints?
Well, you know, when scientists have gone back and looked for situations where people have had some really big, profound experience. So in Sweden, for example, there were, you know, periodic famines. And so a scientist went and looked at the records from one region in Scandinavia where people every now and then would, you know, run low on food. And so that would put a lot of stress on people. And he found that it seemed to affect the health of the grandchildren of people who lived through these famines. And so somehow it seems like, well, maybe there's some kind of effect that's getting carried down through the generations. That's about as strong as the evidence gets. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, you can't go back to 300 years and look with molecular precision at all the epigenetics in people's bodies. So it's really hard to take from that that, well, it's definitely the case that you know, surviving a famine will have impacts on the health of your grandchildren or great-grandchildren. We just don't know.
Yeah. My guest is Carl Zimmer. His new book is She Has Her Mother's Laugh, The Powers, Perversions, and Potential of Heredity. And Carl, thank you so much for joining us on Cool Science Radio.
My pleasure.
Take care.